Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Let's be honest. Do you have fruit in your fridge that's almost past its prime? Too much cilantro or parsley that's starting to wilt? When you're prepping veggies, do you throw away the stems and peels? Well, before you toss them in the trash, consider upcycling some of these ingredients. The Department of Agriculture estimates that a whopping one-third of our food in the U.S. ends up in landfills, where it creates methane, a greenhouse gas that contributes to climate change. And one-third of your food going to waste? Well, that's one-third of your grocery money that you basically just lit on fire. So to save money and cut back on trash, I sat down with a few experts to learn a few techniques to give our food a new life. Lisa Seamus is a freelance dining journalist. She's written about this for the Chicago Tribune. Also with us is Devin Quinn, chef at Eden Restaurant in Chicago's Avondale neighborhood. Lisa starts with the outpouring of support she received when researching her story with the Tribune.
All the chefs I spoke with were so proud to discuss the different ways they do this. Mm-hmm. I did a similar piece maybe, 10 to 12 years ago and didn't have quite the response I had. Now, I had so many chefs that just wanted to talk about the different ways they're doing this. And I think overall the perception has changed, has shifted on the consumer side. You have things like imperfect produce kind of came out a couple years back. So people are getting used to this thought that your produce doesn't have to be perfect, starting with when you buy it.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of, and then during the pandemic, I think people became so aware of how much waste they produce because, you know, everyone was cooking at home. And so I think people were starting to rethink how they can reuse things and not be producing so much trash financially and just from a sustainability kind of attitude.
Absolutely. Yeah, and talk about that surprise of the level of interest when you reached out. I mean, you talked to more than 10 chefs.
And had more that wanted to contribute and had some that emailed responses. So,
I've
never interviewed that many before for one article, but it was a joy to hear their passion for this. So it was really wonderful.
One such chef was Chef Quinn. Anything to add there? I mean, why is this part of your focus?
Well, I think it's our responsibility as chefs to make sure that we're treating food true to how it should be and utilizing all the parts. You know, it's also a penny pinching business. So the value of a peel is when I'm buying something is the same cost as the heart of whatever that vegetable is. So try to treat it like that. The value is the same. So why would I throw something away that has value if I can otherwise process it and turn it into something delicious?
As you talk about, you know, the penny pinching business, as you call it. I mean, did you notice what Lisa sort of alluded to, a shift in the way that you had to think when COVID came around?
I think absolutely. I've also had the pleasure and the honor to work with some really great culinary minds in my early career that taught me the right ways to think about food and to have a really good philosophy in regards to food. But yeah, certainly COVID, when that happened and we had no means of doing anything with our food that we had just either grown and or bought, I think every chef in the city was figuring out how to preserve it in some way, shape, or form and how to get rid of it. We don't like to waste things. Certainly that's like
that
the
hurts
bottom
your heart.
Of the barrel. Yeah,
for sure. You've got a greenhouse and you grow a lot of your produce. Mm-hmm. So does upcycling apply to what you buy and what you grow?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you think of the ingredients the same. We don't have a huge footprint on property to grow in. So we get pretty creative even with the things that we grow. So yeah, you want to use the roots of the plant, you want to use the leaves, you want to use the stems, be as versatile as possible. You know, we have things like a Chicago fig tree and a lemon tree and stuff. Our operation's pretty large, so we can't supply the fruit per se from those plants, but we utilize the leaves to flavor creams and things of that nature, kind of treat them like teas and steeping in it. And it's unbelievable the amount of flavor you're able to pick up off of even those types of things.
Interesting. Lisa, what else did you hear from chefs about how this all saves money?
Well, it saves money just because they're utilizing it from the beginning to end. But another thing that a lot of the chefs brought up was the sense of, you know, as good chefs, they respect the ingredients. And with that respect comes respect from the people that provide it, the farmers and the purveyors. Mm-hmm. So I think it goes beyond just the ingredients, financial and any environmentally friendly. It's this respect and community around these ingredients and the people that are behind them and making them. So I think that was a really lovely thing to see it kind of go beyond just dollars and cents for me.
Yeah. If someone has too much of a good thing, chef, freezing, we know that could be an option.
Sure.
I'm a big fan of freezing things. What are best practices for freezing so that it doesn't all just turn into one big ice block?
If you're talking about vegetables, you likely have to cook them first. If you're freezing a raw vegetable,
so that's what I've been doing wrong.
upon thawing, if you freeze a raw vegetable, you're going to have a ton of water that leaches out after it thaws. All of those cell walls are going to break, and you're going to leach a lot of water. If you're blanching first or roasting any kind of high heat preparation at the beginning, then you want to freeze as quickly as possible so you're not creating large ice crystals. If possible, we don't all have that option. We don't all have things like blast chillers and things like that. So
no, I was reading Lisa's story and just like going through all the different, you know, types of equipment that was mentioned. I'm thinking I need to buy all this stuff at home.
Yeah, there's rudimentary ways that you can do some of these concepts at home. Even like we use a cryovac machine in our operation where you're removing air and oxygen from something. So that's even better. You'll get a lot of freezing life out of something or more life in your cooler. At home, you can do a similar thing with just Ziploc bags, even if you don't have a vacuum sealing machine. So what I do is I fill a basin with water. I take a gallon Ziploc bag and I'll seal that about 3/4 of the way across. And then you submerge that bag with whatever product you have inside it into the water. Displacement will push all of the air out, and you'll be able to get essentially an air-free bag. So you just, and then you finish your seal up to the top of the water bath.
That's a great tip.
And then you can freeze from there and, you know, dry your bag off first so you don't have a bunch of ice on the outside of the bag, but it allows you to label it and use for later.
I love that tip so much. I also love eating fresh food, and I like to use the freshest ingredients when I'm cooking. So with some of these practices that we're talking about here today, I mean, just for the person who might be worried, how can we ensure optimum freshness?
Oh, I mean, you want to, as fresh as possible, as never put it in your refrigerator. That's what we try to do with herbs and greens and stuff at the restaurant. We try to pick what we're going to use that day so that you're not using a lot, you're not losing a lot of those aromatic qualities, which you lose very quickly upon storage in a refrigerator. You know, it's also about like transforming ingredients as well in this preservation. You know, it's amazing what a little bit of salt and some fermentation to a vegetable or a fruit will do in a pretty short amount of time, 10, 12 days. You can completely transform something that's sugary and sweet into something that's like savory and meaty in flavor almost.
Yeah. Lisa writes about chefs using extra herbs to make simple syrups or bitters for drinks.
Yeah,
tell us more.
The cocktail people are getting just as creative. Pretty much almost all the restaurants I spoke with have a similar mindset for their cocktail program. So the leftover herbs can be used for bitters, orange peels. One is a Galit restaurant makes what's called a gazoz. I think I'm pronouncing it right. It's an Israeli type soda that uses fruit and herbs and sugar, like Chef was talking about, to turn it into more of a syrup. And then you combine that with a soda. So you can go alcoholic, you can go non-alcoholic, but there's very simple things you can do to create things on the beverage side as well.
Many of the chefs that you talk to are turning peels and stalks into powders.
Yeah, I think that's a sense of reinforcing the flavor of the ingredient of a dish. Like one chef is doing a carrot dish, so he uses the peels to create a carrot powder. And that just, so we all go to restaurants and wonder why everything tastes so good. In some instances, it's something like this where they've taken the flavor of a carrot and made it times two, and at the same time utilize that to the fullest as well.
Yeah.
So it has a benefit of a lot of different things.
How can this concentrate flavor, Chef?
Well, you know, dried things taste differently than fresh things. So you're certainly undergoing some kind of chemical reactions in that process of dehydrating or whatever you're doing. We do something similar where we, you know, if you're juicing carrots, for instance, you're left over with a bunch of pulp at the end. We dehydrate out that pulp overnight. You do that at a low temperature so that you're not losing the color, the beta carotene color. And then that, once it's dehydrated, you're able to put it into a blender and turn it into a really fine powder. And yeah, it'll taste of carrot, but it's like, it's some other things have happened in that process. So it'll have some other nuances. It'll have some more complexities to it.
Something that stood out to me in your story, Lisa, is the example you give of a chef taking leftovers and using it in a new recipe, even if it wasn't technically correct. Mm-hmm. Right. So tell us about the rice pudding dessert at Kimski, the Korean fusion restaurant in Bridgeport.
That was kind of, I saw Chef had posted that, Chef Won Kim had posted that on Instagram. And it just, that's what initiated the thought of this, like, okay, this is a topic that I'd like to explore again and see where chefs are at.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, he knew it wasn't the right rice to use. It wasn't long grain or like a floral jasmine rice. But his attitude was, well, let's see what happens. Why not?
Experimenting.
Mm-hmm, and he was just so happy that it also gave a chef that maybe wouldn't get top billing or wouldn't have a dish on the menu a chance to have his creation on the menu and take a pride in that dish. And there's a whole learning process in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. So it goes, like I said earlier, it goes so beyond just the ingredient itself.
Right, right. You talked to Chef Damar Brown of Virtue in Hyde Park. And speaking of experiments, he was trying to make a prosciutto with leftover duck meat.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work at first. Then he made some tweaks. And now it's almost like a staple
of
the menu.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, I think a lot of chefs just kept saying, just try. You know, and a lot of these restaurants have these great composting programs, and you can have a compost program at home. But a lot of the chefs, you know, it's not like they knew exactly what they wanted to do. They just kept experimenting and trying something, and you could do that at home as well. And worst comes worst, you put it in your compost bin. But hopefully you've created something new, or maybe you've learned a new technique that you might have to refine the next time around.
Yeah. Say more on that, Chef, that thought of these are experiments.
Mm-hmm.
Trying and trying again when something doesn't quite work out. It sounds like an important lesson.
Yeah, you know what? My background is in biology and science. I worked in laboratories before I ever started cooking. And so experimentation is important. I allow it. You know, you don't want to be wasting huge amounts of product and things like that. Again, it's a penny pinching business, but how are you ever going to progress forward if you're not trying new things? And certainly you learn from other experiences and stuff as well. I'm sure Chef Lamar, you know, he's cured other things. And so he was probably pretty close on his first attempt at that duck. But as a perfectionist, you want to know exactly how long that salt should stay on, exactly how long it should age, you know, to be as perfect as possible. So experimenting is constant as well. You know, even after we put a dish on the menu, we'll retaste that dish several times. I mean, throughout the weeks that it's on the menu, and there may be some tweaks and some changes based on that. Like, couldn't this element be a little bit different?
And as a consumer, that's really good to hear.
Yeah,
right?
Good.
We've mentioned, you know, if this does ultimately fail, I mean, there's always composting. We've talked about that. I hear you've got a pretty cool composting system.
Well, composting is a choice, right? We pay for composting. Again, it's not something we have to do, but it's part of that responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, at least in my establishment, I don't pay for garbage removal, but we do for compost, and it becomes nearly half of the stuff that gets tossed in our kitchen. So it's a pretty big expense. At the same time, it's like, I don't know. It's our responsibility.
Yeah.
If we want this loop to continue to recreate soil for other people to use to grow, we get some of that back from, the name of is escaping. Waste Not is the company that we use to do it. And we've gotten some buckets back that we've incorporated back into our own garden system.
Mm-hmm. And real quick, while I have you, Chef, I mean, we mentioned some food past its prime, right? Because that can happen.
Sure.
I want to be clear. When is some food not safe to eat? Like, what's the range where someone could still consider eating it? I'm thinking meat, dairy, eggs.
Hey, your most important tool in the kitchen is your nose. If something smells off, it's probably not good, but don't be scared. I shouldn't say this in my restaurant because we certainly follow health code and such with expiration dates and such, but those are meaningless to an extent, those expiration dates. Like, if your gallon of milk in your refrigerator has an expiration date of yesterday, open it up and smell it.
Yeah.
And if it still has that nice sweet smell to it, like it hasn't gone sour, drink it or use it.
It's a suggested date.
Yeah, it's a suggested date.
Like a guess almost. So leave us with this, and I'm looking at both of you. Final tips for the folks at home who want to dive into this upcycling.
I had one good one from a chef was when you have a dish and you have leftovers, rather than just thinking of that dish, think of a new way to use it. Like if you only have a little bit of beef stew left over, freeze it and then take it out and add some broth to it, add some vegetables to it. So now you made it into a soup. So I think it's not thinking each dish can only be that dish when you want to reuse it. So there are other ways to think about one dish.
Yes, that's a great one. And you've already given us so many tips, Chef. Anything else to add?
I just say there's a lot of good references out there. You know, another chef, Paul Verrant, that was interviewed for the article. He has a book called Preservation Kitchen. There's several others out there that give the basics. I'd say that it's, you know, it's certainly becoming a trend as well as creating a larder of sorts at home, you know, doing some pickled things, doing some dehydrated things, some different preservation methods. And then you start to build up a pantry so that you can use those items as you experiment with cooking.
That's perfect. That's Chef Devin Quinn of Eden Restaurant in Avondale and Lisa Seamus, who's a freelance food and dining writer. Now you can catch her full story at chicagotribune.com. Great stuff. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. To hear more conversations about food, head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk to you this afternoon.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.